Track 25. Mary with the First Christians, the gift to Mary and John of Lazarus's house at Gethsemane, and Mary and John revisit the scene of the Passion.
It is one of the very first meetings of Christians in the days immediately after Pentecost. Maria Valtorta describes the vision she sees. The fact that all 12 apostles are there proves that they have not yet parted to go out and evangelize, according to the order of the Master. So, Pentecost must have been only a short time ago. The supper room has undergone a modification necessary for its new function as a church, and it is already crowded with people. In a corner there is Mary, the mother, surrounded by Martha and Mary Magdalene, with Nike, Eliza, Mary of Alphaeus, Salome, Johanna of Chusa, in short, by many of the women disciples. Among the men there are Nicodemus, Lazarus, Joseph of Arimathea, the shepherds, also Longinus, not in his military uniform. Peter now speaks, evangelizing and teaching the people present. He is full of stateliness. There is no longer anything in him of the rather coarse fisherman of not long ago. He speaks moderately, in an appropriate voice, with the gestures of a true orator. His eyes, always expressive, are now more eloquent than ever. Love, faith, authority, contrition, everything shines through his eyes, anticipating and reinforcing his words. James and Judas Thaddeus, that is, the two sons of Alphaeus, lift the large, low chest which is on the centre of the table, and they spread a very fine linen cloth on its lid. The Apostle John now goes to Mary and asks her something. Mary slips off from her neck a kind of small key and gives it to John. John takes it, goes back to the chest and opens it. In the upper section, in the centre, are the chalice used by Jesus at the Last Supper and for the First Eucharist, and the remains of the bread broken by him and laid on a small plate as precious as the chalice. On the side of the chalice and of the small plate there are the crown of thorns, the nails and the sponge. On the other side are one of the shrouds rolled up, the veil with which Nike wiped Jesus' face, and the one that Mary gave her son to gird up his loins. At the bottom there are other things, but they remain rather concealed. The apostles, in chorus, intone some psalms. They are joined by the crowd, and so it becomes more and more impressive. At the end they bring some bread. John hands the tray with the bread to Peter, who raises it and offers it. He then blesses it and lays it on the chest. Judas Thaddeus hands Peter the chalice and two amphorae, and Peter pours their contents into the chalice, which he then raises and offers, as he had done with the bread. He blesses also the chalice and lays it on the chest beside the bread. They say more prayers. Peter breaks the bread into many morsels while the people prostrate themselves, and he says, "This is my body, do this in memory of me." He goes to Mary and gives her a morsel. Then he goes to the front of the table and hands out the consecrated bread to all those who approach him to have it. he now takes the chalice and offers it to those who are present, always beginning from Mary. John and Judas Thaddeus follow him with the small amphorae. They add the liquids when the chalice is empty, while Peter repeats the elevation, the offering, and the blessing to consecrate the liquid. When all those who ask to be nourished with the Eucharist are satisfied, the apostles consume the bread and wine left over. Then they sing another psalm or hymn. After this, Peter blesses the crowd who, after his blessing, go away little by little. Mary, the mother, who has remained on her knees during the whole ceremony of the consecration and the distribution of the species of the bread and wine, stands up and goes to the chest. She bends across the large table, and with her forehead she touches the upper section of the chest where the chalice and the small plate used by Jesus at the Last Supper are laid. And she kisses the edges of them, a kiss that is also for all the relics gathered there. Then John closes the chest and hands the key back to Mary, who puts it again round her neck. Soon afterwards, Lazarus and Joseph of Arimathea come to visit Mary, still in the house of the Last Supper. Lazarus offers her his little house in the garden at Gethsemane to live in, and Joseph offers her access to his garden containing Jesus' tomb. Lazarus says, "Gethsemane, completely enclosed, is awaiting you, Mary. And I assure you that the enemies of Jesus, out of fear of Rome, will not dare to violate its peace and yours." "Oh, since it is so," exclaims Mary. She presses her hands against her heart, looking at them with a countenance that is almost ecstatic. And with an angelic smile on her lips and tears of joy on her fair eyelashes, she continues, "John and I, alone, we two all alone. I shall seem to be once again at Nazareth with my son, alone in peace, in that peace, where my Jesus gave forth so many words and so much spirit of peace, where, it is true, he suffered so much that he sweated blood and received the supreme moral sorrow of the infinite kiss. And the first," and a very painful recollection interrupt her words and upset her face. She then collects herself and says, "And there, where he went back to the infinite peace of paradise. I will soon send Mary of Alphaeus instructions to look after my little house in Nazareth, which is so dear to me, so dear, but never as much as these places, where he instituted the rite of rites, and he became bread, blood, life for men, where he suffered and redeemed, where he founded his church, and where, with his last blessing, he made all the things of creation good and holy. I will remain, yes, I will remain here. I will go to Gethsemane. From there, walking along the outside of the walls, I shall be able to go to Golgotha, and I shall be able to come to your house, Lazarus, where I have always had so much love, in my son first, and then for myself. But I should like..." "What, Blessed Mother?" they both ask her. "Son, let me call you so. I should like you to allow us to make of this house, that is, of the supper room, a place for meetings and for brotherly agape." And Lazarus replies, "It is just. In this place your son instituted the new eternal rite. He founded his new church, elevating his apostles and disciples to a new pontificate and priesthood. It is just that that room should become the first temple of the new religion, the seed that tomorrow will be a tree and then a huge forest, and the embryo that tomorrow will be a complete vital organism. And it will grow more and more in height, depth and width, spread all over the earth. Which table and altar are holier than the ones on which he broke the bread and laid the chalice of the new rite that will last as long as the earth? And Mary replies, "That is true, Lazarus, and see, for this I am sewing clean tablecloths, because I believe, as no one will believe with equal strength, that the bread and wine are he, in his flesh and in his blood, most holy and innocent flesh, redeeming blood. May the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit bless you, O good wise men, who have always been compassionate to the Son and to his mother." "So it is decided," says Lazarus. "Take this. It is the key that opens the various gates of the enclosure at Gethsemane. And this is the key of the house. And be happy." Joseph of Arimathea, in turn, says, "And this is the key of the enclosure of my kitchen garden." "May God bless you again," repeats Mary. "Thanks to you, Mother," says Joseph, "our love and the peace of God to you always." And they prostrate themselves after this last greeting. They kiss the hem of her dress once again, and they go away. When the two visitors are gone, a worried John comes in and asks, "What did Joseph and Lazarus want? Is there any danger?" "No, son. There is only the satisfaction of a wish of mine, a wish of mine and of other people. Lazarus is now satisfying this general wish, and he makes us the masters of Gethsemane. You and I, all alone there, here are the keys. And this is the key of Joseph's kitchen garden. We shall be able to go to the sepulchre and to Bethany without going through the town, and go to Golgotha, and come here every time that there is a brotherly agape. Lazarus and Joseph are granting us everything." "They are really two just men," says John. "Lazarus received a lot from Jesus, that is true, but he always gave everything to Jesus. Are you happy, Mother?" "Yes, John, so much. I will live as long as God wants, helping Peter and James and all of you, and I will help the first Christians in every way. If the Judeans, the Pharisees and the priests are not wild animals towards me, as they were for my son, I shall be able to breathe my last where he ascended to his Father." "You will ascend as well, Mother." "No, I am not Jesus. I was born in a human way." Continuing the previous passage, John tells Mary he believes she will have the destiny that Eve never had. He says, "That is why I feel that you, the second Eve and faithful to grace, are not destined to death. So you, chosen by God among all the women who lived and will live on the earth, will not die like a plant that withers, but you will live forever, with your whole self in the tabernacle of heaven. I am sure of that, because God is just, and the decree issued by God for those who have neither hereditary nor voluntary sin on their souls applies to you." "Has Jesus revealed that to you?" asks Mary. "No, Mother. The Spirit Paraclete tells me. He who the Master told us would reveal future things and all truth to us. The Comforter is already telling me this, in my spirit, to make the thought of losing you less bitter for me, Blessed Mother. I love and venerate you so much, and even more than my own mother, because of what you have suffered, and because you are good and holy, inferior only to your most holy Son among all present and future saints, the greatest saint. And John, deeply moved, prostrates himself, venerating her. Maria Valtorta describes a scene she sees very early on a clear summer morning. Mary, with the faithful John, leaves the little house at Gethsemane and walks quickly through the silent and deserted olive grove. Without any hesitation, Mary directs her steps towards the rock of the agony. She kneels against it. She kisses where some thin fissures in the rock still show rusty red traces of Jesus' blood. She caresses them as if she was still caressing her son or part of him. John, standing behind her, watches her and weeps silently, wiping his eyes quickly when Mary makes the gesture of standing up. He even helps her to do so, and he does it with so much love, veneration, and compassion. Mary now goes down to the open area where Jesus was captured. She kneels down and she bends to kiss the earth after asking John, "Is this exactly the place of the horrible ill-famed kiss?" She then stands up saying, "But I am not Eve. I am the woman of the Ave. I turned things upside down. The demon was not able to speak to me, although he tried, as he tried with my son, to destroy the redemption plan definitively. He was not able to speak to me because I closed my ears to his voice and my eyes to his sight. And above all, I closed my heart and my spirit against every attack of what is not holy and pure. And now I can remove and wash with my kiss and my tears the impression of that cursed kiss and of that contamination." They go from Gethsemane along the various places where Jesus trod, bypassing Joseph's kitchen garden, and head towards Golgotha. When they arrive at the summit, Mary's kisses become more frequent at the place of the crucifixion. Kisses and tears, the former almost convulsive, the latter calm but as thick as rain, fall on the yellowish earth, wetting it and making its yellowish colour darker. A little plant has come up just where the earth was moved to plant the cross there. It is a humble, wild little plant with heart-shaped leaves and little flowers as red as rubies. Mary looks at it. She becomes pensive, and then she removes it delicately from the soil with a little loose earth, and she lays it in the hem of her mantle, saying to John, "I will put it in a vase. It looks like his blood, and it has come up in the earth made red by his blood. It is certainly a seed carried by the whirlwind of that day. It came from who knows where, and fell there who knows why, to take root in the dust, fertilized by that blood. I wish it were so for all the souls." John embraces her shoulders with his arm, and he convinces her to leave that place which is too sorrowful for her. They go down to the foot of the hill again, and into Joseph's kitchen garden. The sepulchre shows its inside with a wide opening, no longer closed by the stone which is still lying overturned on the ground among the grass. It is empty inside. All traces of the burial and of the resurrection have disappeared. It looks like a sepulchre that has never been used. Mary kisses the stone of the unction and casts loving glances at the walls. Then she asks John, Tell me once again how you found things here, when you came here with Peter at the dawn of the resurrection. John, moving here and there, outside and inside the sepulchre, describes how the things were and what he and Peter did. And he ends up by saying, "We should have collected the linens, but we were so upset by all the events of those days that we did not think about it. When we came back, the linens were no longer there. Those of the temple must have taken them to desecrate them," says Mary, interrupting him and weeping. And she concludes, "Not even Mary Magdalene thought that they should have been taken away to be given to me. She was too upset as well." "The temple? No," says John. "I think that Joseph has taken them. He would have told me. Oh, Jesus' enemies must have taken them for a last insult," says Mary, moaning. "Do not weep. Do not suffer any more, Mother. He is now in his glory, in infinite, perfect love. Hatred and insults can no longer touch him." They come out of the sepulchre, leave the kitchen garden, and they go back to Gethsemane along the same road by which they came. Mary walks quickly and silently, all enveloped in her mantle. She has only the sensation of disgust and horror when she passes near the olive grove where Judas hanged himself, and near the country house of Caiaphas, and she whispers, "Here he completed his damnation of an unrepentant soul in despair, and there he finalized the deal."